Recording now, recording. Yes, we are recording. Hello, this is Life, Passion and Business, and I am with my co-host today. And we have had a technological awfulness this morning, so we're now recording this separately on a different system. So Facebook has not been playing ball for some reason. Anyway, Lisa, nice to see you. What have you got for us today?
Sure. So today, Paul, we're going to talk about whether we should or shouldn't be ourselves in our work, what it really means to be ourselves, so what it means to be authentic, and what the emotional, psychological, and physical benefits to being authentic are.
You're going to talk and about feelings, aren't you? You're going to talk about feelings.
I mean, emotions come into this, absolutely, because, you know, you're expressing one's emotions authentically, then it's, you know, a very big part of this, absolutely. So, and then I'd like to finish by looking at what people can do, like what are the first tangible steps they can actually take, you know, in order to move forward and get that bit more authentic with their work and ultimately their life, because life and work, they go together, they go hand in hand.
Do you think people are inauthentic though in work? I'm pretty much who I am. You get me as I am. You know, today you're getting me a bit jaded this morning because I woke up at 5 this morning with the birds this morning, and I thought it was 6, and then I got up at 5:30 and went for a run for 10K this morning. So I'm feeling like half a day so far.
That's amazing. Congratulations. That's very very inspirational to know. Well done.
Yeah. Okay. I'll let you know.
Yeah, you'll let me know how that goes. So, are people authentic? Is your question, are people authentic or aren't they authentic?
You know, it's like there's a set way you're supposed to behave the right way, aren't you, when you're in work and business. There's a right way of doing things. Don't discuss politics and religion, and do the right thing and dress the right way and, you know, and say the right things, you know, that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I think that's changing. I think that's rapidly changing. I think now more and more there's an acceptance that we bring the whole person to work. You know, we don't leave anything behind. And I think there is more willingness, more openness to really ask and to expect and to be happy with a person expressing their emotional state.
Hang on a minute. Now, I recognize this because it's a thing of youth. It's like as I was working in corporate, you know, you would see the kids arrive in the... No, I'm sorry, I'm being really, really rude and disrespectful, but I'm going to be disrespectful. You'd see the kids arrive in sales at 17 who would wear their hearts on their sleeves. They would be authentic. And they would be a bloody nuisance being so authentic. So how do you manage that authenticity without it actually being like in everybody's face and in the way? What's the balance point here? How do you get here?
It's really difficult to know, and I think it's something that we all experiment with. But the first thing for me, it's really getting that self-awareness, because until you reach a point where you really understand yourself, you can't really interact in a good and healthy and optimal way with other human beings. So you see, the first thing for me, Paul, is how much do people really understand about themselves?
Yeah, because you're right, because the kids are actually not understanding themselves. They're just playing and they're just being teenagers. They're 17, 18 years old. They're in work their first time. They've got a bit of money in their pocket and they're just expressing life as they see it. But they're not really, don't really know themselves, do they? Of course.
Absolutely. And you can say the same about people in their 20s, sometimes people in their 30s, 40s. You know, age doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, the older we get, it doesn't mean that we get all this clarity and all of this self-awareness. Hopefully that is what happens. You know, we get that little bit of wisdom and that bit of insight, but it's not a given, that's for sure. And I think no matter what the age, we all have a lot of work to do on ourselves, you know, in order to really tap into who we are, what's important to us, and what this is all about, you know, in our eyes. And it doesn't matter if you're working for someone else or whether you're working for yourself. There comes a moment in life when I think we want to feel that what we do and how we show up in the world is the true reflection of who we are and what we're about. And that is why I think authenticity is key. You know, they say that people who live more authentically usually are happier, they're healthier, they just have this sense of serenity and the sense that things are the way they should be. They're not pretending. And interestingly, it's been found that people who have to be very different to what they really are at work, to how they are at home, that difference really grates on people, and physically, emotionally, psychologically, it makes people feel bad. You know, so the more we are the same in every role in life, the better we feel, the more congruent and whole we feel.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I mean, living a lie is quite difficult. And I've met a lot of people, I've met quite a few people who tend to live their life in terms of the picture, how they think they should be leading life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all right. An example yesterday, my wife and I went into town yesterday to pick some stuff up.
Mm-hmm.
And, we were looking for somewhere to eat, and I said, let's go over the bridge and go down to Keswick there. There's a lovely park by the waterway there. We could sit there. And we went into this cafe, which was very dark and wasn't where we wanted to be, really. Wasn't where I wanted to be. But my wife got embarrassed that I said, no, I don't want to be here. We haven't looked at the menus. And I said, no, I actually don't want to be here. It's a sunny day. Why am I sitting in a dark place? And it's like, but for her, my kind of going, I don't want to be here, is embarrassing, because like, well, I don't want to embarrass the people that we're leaving, and I'm going.
All right. So,
yeah, it's that thing, isn't it? It's like some people can't like deal with the fact that they might upset other people by being themselves.
Sure. Yeah. Yes. To get to the point where you feel very comfortably authentic, I think it's quite a journey and it's quite a process. You know, and there's always going to be this tension with human beings between wanting to feel connected to other people and wanting to feel like the individual that they are. You know, we have these two very distinct and conflicting needs. On the one hand, we want to be celebrated for who we are. On the other hand, you know, we want to belong. We want to be the same. We want to belong to the tribe. So I think, you know, often people try to reconcile this, and it takes time to really grow into who you are authentically. But first of all, you have to do that interior work, you know. You have to think about who you are, what your strengths are, what your values are, how you want to entwine those and how you want to bring them to the world and make a living from it or make a life from it. And that takes time. That's a journey, isn't it?
Well, I guess it is. I mean, it all takes us a while to discover or for our innate traits to be revealed. I'm still looking and I'm 55. Well, 55 next Monday. But, you know,
Yeah.
You know, it's like it does take time to unfold, but it's like there's also that an authenticity aspect of it, of like being in the wrong place. Because I could imagine that there are some environments where you behave in a certain way and your authenticness of you, how your authenticity of it might be incongruent with the environment.
Yeah, so the way you interpret the environment might be different from the way you think you should interpret the environment, do you mean?
Well, I'm thinking in like there are certain roles or certain jobs which hold a certain kind of way of being. And if you're not that way of being, then you probably shouldn't be in that job in the first place. But some people found themselves in that role and they're playing out that journey. And suddenly if they start being authentic, it's not going to work. And I can't think of an environment. Well, I can. I was thinking of perhaps like, you know, a very high pressure kind of telephone based sales environment where everyone is going out, where there's this rah, rah, rah aspect of it. You know, and if that's not really you, and I guess you probably wouldn't be there because you wouldn't last 10 minutes in that kind of environment. If it wasn't you, you wouldn't last.
Yeah, it's very difficult, isn't it? I see what you're saying now. And it's true that, for example, in prestigious, you know, in what society considers to be very prestigious work, like law or medicine, very often the people involved, they're encouraged to really take this on as their identity. Because, you know, there's a degree to which the work we do eventually for most people becomes to some degree their identity. You know, you mentioned this last week. In the UK, it's very typical when you first meet a person to ask, you know, what do you do? Because we assume that what a person does is going to say a lot about who they are. And often that may be the case. but often not. You know, there are some professions which aren't as glamorous, which aren't as prestigious. And in that case, the workers, they're not encouraged to take on that identity. In fact, they're actively encouraged to dissociate from it, so as to be able to do the job without it affecting too much of who they are. So I think it really depends on the kind of work that is involved. And also, as we were talking about last week when we were speaking about calling and vocation, I think, you know, there are people for whom it matters what they do and who they are. And there are other people who are very able to put life and work in two different boxes. Yet what study after study has shown is that when we're able to merge the two, to fuse the two, and to feel that who we are and what we do, you know, they're linked, they're connected, there's a lot of congruence and overlap, usually we have a higher emotional and psychological well-being. Yet at the same time, to be more invested in our work emotionally and psychologically, that can take a toll too. And that's where, you know, professions like nursing, you know, being a doctor, being a teacher, they have higher rates of stress and burnout for the fact that because we're so emotionally invested, when the going gets tough, that can be more demanding, and that can lead, you know, to greater emotional worn out, being worn out.
Okay, so our message today is be authentic.
I think so.
But what does that mean? How do I? Okay, I'm going to be authentic. I mean, I am most of the time. I am pretty much all the time. How do you be authentic, Lisa? How do I say, look, be authentic? How do I do that?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a difficult question, isn't it, to answer? For me, Paul, the first thing to do is to get very clear about who you are. And I think, you know, the videos we've done so far and the journey we've been going on so far, and hopefully where this is leading to, this is a journey of going into yourself. It's a journey of introspection, so that later we can come back out to the world very clear about who we are, what our personality is, what our innate strengths and values are, and how we'd like to take them to the rest of the world. Therefore, to really get going on this journey, my first suggestion would be to take the 16 personality tests. So to take the Myers-Briggs type indicator, because this gives you a fairly detailed and, to my mind, fairly accurate picture of who you are.
So you can't fail that test, can you?
You can't fail it.
Sure?
No, right.
You sure you can't fail that test? I'm sure I could fail that test. I'm sure I could.
I'm pretty sure you can't, Paul. No right or wrong answer at all, you know.
The problem with these tests I find is I look at the answers and go, well, I could be that and I could be that. I could be either. And I tend to kind of like, and I've done these on the test before, and sometimes I come out looking like a superhero because I second guess what the right answer is.
Ah, that's interesting. Just the language you're using, you know, what the right answer is. Like there was a right or wrong answer, you know. Again, no, there's no failing here. This is just trying to get to the core of your authentic preferences, you know. This Myers-Briggs type indicator, it's showing like the way you want to show up in the world. So, for example, it tells you whether you have a more introverted or extroverted tendency. So whether you get energized by being around other people or being on your own. You know, I'm an introvert, so my first letter here is the I, because my energy comes from when I'm alone. You know, I love being with other human beings and I need that, but my real energy comes back to me when I'm alone. I'm able to reflect. I'm able to think about things. What was your type, Paul? Can you remind me?
Wasn't it E something?
Yeah, I think you were more of the extrovert. Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, the great thing about this is nobody's either an extrovert or an introvert, but we have a natural preference. So I'm 40% extrovert and 60% introvert. So, you know, there's not too much of a discrepancy, but it does mean I need that little bit of extra time alone.
I think I'm 70-30.
70-30, was that right? Okay. Yeah, most of the world, I think it's 75% of the world, they have the extrovert preference, the extrovert tendency. So we introverts are in the minority.
But, you know, it's like you say that I'm extrovert. I actually do quite enjoy my own company. I'm quite happy on my own.
Yep, Absolutely. And once again, it's not an all or nothing, you know, it's simply your perhaps most natural innate preference would be, in the majority of situations, to feel energized by other human beings.
And saying that, though, it's like I can recognize where my introvertness comes out. So a couple of years ago, there was an event on in London, which I was going to, part of a group thing. And the day was screwed from the start. I got off the plane at Gatwick and switched my phone and it blew up. And so everything was in my phone that day. All my appointments, just about everything was in that phone and it went. And so.
Oh no.
I mean, I had a parking space in London somewhere and I needed the phone to get to that parking space. So anyway, needless to say, my day was a lot of chasing. So, but I eventually ended up at this event in the evening, like an hour and a half late. Mm-hmm. And of course, everyone had a chance to interact and get to know each other. And I felt like I knew no one in this sea of people. And I have to say, I felt about that big. And I didn't know how to get any bigger. It was awful. I mean, it was a good event in terms of going there. But what I went there for was to connect with people. And I connected with no one because everybody had locked into their cliques. And I didn't actually know enough about how to get there. It was really hard. So I don't know. I find times like that very, very challenging.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, even when you're an extrovert, that doesn't mean there aren't moments when you're not overcome by shyness, you know, self-doubt, the imposter syndrome. We all have these moments. Mm. But the interesting thing about this personality test is, you know, this gives us just a general overview, a general idea of what our tendency would be. Not in every situation, but often. And I think, you know, the beauty of this kind of test, It's to get us thinking, really. It's to use as a springboard for deeper exploration about who we are and what matters to us, you know, and how we want to show up in the world. Now, the second initial, the second letter, would be either the S or the N. So the S is for sensing and the N is for intuition. It's the second letter of the word intuition. So really, people who have the S tendency, they tend to perceive things through their senses and react to that information, okay? So they're very focused on specific facts, concrete details, you know, they process information through their senses, whereas people who have the N, which is me, because I'm an INFP, we rely on intuition, you know. We get feelings, we get hunches, and we tend to see the bigger picture rather than each and every minute detail.
I've just dug out my test results, and I was ENFP.
Okay, so yeah, you're not so dissimilar to me, except for the fact you get your energy from other people, from other sources. Yeah, so we're both the N, so we both go more on intuition. And then the third letter is either a T or an F. So the T is for thinking.
I'm P.
The F is for feeling.
I'm a P.
That's the fourth letter.
Oh, right. I'm an F for feeling. Sorry, F for feeling.
Exactly. So, yeah, people who go more on feeling than on logic. And then we've got the J and the P, which is the judging. Mm-hmm. So these are people who prefer to have their life plans. They prefer to have a good solid plan, whereas the P for perceiving, these are people who go with the flow, more naturally spontaneous, able to react to spontaneity.
That's me.
Yeah. Do you feel that you kind of relate?
I pretty much kind of go, yeah, whatever.
yeah, absolutely. Well, this is the thing. I don't think this test gives us the complete picture, but I think if you take this test and you use it in conjunction, for example, with the VIA character strength, I think this can give us a little bit more of a holistic overview of who you are and what you're about.
And the last one was the A for assertive.
Absolutely, yeah. People who are assertive, well, their identity is much clearer and they're able to assert this much more clearly. T for turbulent, you know, things aren't always quite as balanced in harmony. So I'd say, yeah, it sounds pretty accurate to me.
It says I should be a diplomat.
You should be a diplomat.
Apparently.
Wow. What else? Yeah.
A people mastery, apparently.
Absolutely.
Confusing what that means.
Yeah, I think, yeah, people who have this strong feeling and strong intuition, you know, we naturally understand other human beings. And I think this is something we can harness. You know, the beauty of these tests, it kind of gives us an inclination of the way we see the world, or the way we understand and relate to other human beings. And that knowledge, I think, can help us decide how we can use our skills, how we can use our abilities. In service of the rest.
It is interesting though, because it's like, I know from my wife would probably be okay me sharing this, but I mean, you know, she it tends to be someone that's quite introverted, but she would like not to be. She would like to be, have the confidence to be different. So can you actually shift? Are these in the abilities? Is this test that's done, are these abilities set, or can we move them?
I think it's a fascinating question. And I think, first of all, what I would say about introversion and extroversion, society has long, from the beginning of time, really has favored extroverted people. And in fact, you know, America, the UK, much of Western society, it's built upon this premise that we should be outgoing, we should be gregarious, always happy, bubbly. But actually, I think it was psychologist Susan Cain who did a beautiful TED talk and also wrote a book about the power of introverts. And there is a lot to be said for introversion and what, you know, and what it can bring to the world and society.
Well, I have to put my hand up to get a word in, you see.
Yeah.
That's quite good, this video, Lark. We can see each other. When you think about Eastern society and you think of the role of like a Buddhist monk in Chinese society, the wise man and those sort of people, they weren't assertive people. It was a slow and quiet wisdom and control or what have you. I can't think of the actual word I'm looking for here, but you know, they weren't extroverts.
No, absolutely not. And what I've really noticed now in my adult life and at the age of 37, much of the time, the people who don't shout, who don't, you know, butt in, who don't try to get their opinion across, these are the people we really need to.
It's all gone stopped. That's no fun at all. We is connected fine, but it's all gone stopped.
Paul?
Yes, hello. You're back.
I don't know what happened there.
It would be your Wi-Fi would have dropped out on it.
All right. Don't know, because I didn't get anything weird, any sort of sign or notification or anything,
because I kept rolling, so it must have been your I was still moving, so it must have been your ring. I've had this the other day with someone in Spain, as it happens. You were saying about the importance of the extrovert and how they are now being the importance of the introvert, how they're being recognized as people of value, because
absolutely. Yeah, so, you know, to be an introvert to me is definitely not a bad thing. The only thing is that, you know, since most of the world are extroverts, sometimes it's difficult for these people to understand that when we decline an invitation or really take that time to be alone, it's nothing personal to these people. It's not simply that we.
But
get
it is
our
difficult
energy.
For the introvert to get their place in the world, surely, because the extroverts crowd them out. You know, I know someone who's quite popular in a group that I'm in, who says the quiet kids don't get sweets. You know, they stand up and speak. You know, the quiet kids don't get their. And like, and he's constantly on about people in the group who are quiet and who lurk because they're introverts. And he's got a point. If as an introvert doesn't speak up or say anything, it's very hard to value or judge them, because not judge them, but value what they say, because it doesn't bloody say anything.
yeah. I take the point too. And to your question a few minutes ago, I would say that people can change and evolve over time.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Paul.
You need a drink.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's an opportunity to change over time. And I, to be honest, I think I changed. I know that I was actually quite introverted as a child. I wouldn't do anything as a child. And there was a period of time, I think it was in my teenage years, that I started to step out of things a bit and actually get a bit more gregarious. But I've never been, you know, I'm perceived as a quiet person. I'm not perceived as particularly loud. But then no, I have absolutely. Done, but I have tread the boards. I've done acting, I've done singing, I've done a variety of things. Wow. And I still sing a little bit now and I need to get back to that. I do miss it.
Wow, so amazing.
Yeah, I'm a natural tenor, I think. There we go. Wow.
I'm impressed, Paul. But you see, you know, and self-confidence really comes from getting clear about who you are. Because until you really know and embrace who you are, who you fundamentally are, it's very difficult to feel that sense of confidence, you know, until your identity is quite strong. Who are you? Until you grasp who you are, you don't know how you want to show up in the world. And that's when you're very easily influenced by other human beings. Now, I'm not saying you ever reach this point where, you know, you decide I'm this and this is where I'm always going to be, because it wouldn't even be desirable. Because what positive psychology has shown us is that in order to feel constantly, you know, happy, we need to feel like we're growing. We need to feel like we're always growing. We're always evolving. So I don't think it's a question of latching onto an identity. If not, getting really clear about who you are at your core and how you'd like to show up in the world. You know, getting clear about what your main character strengths are and how you'd like to use them in the world. Getting clear about what your fundamental values are and seeing how you can serve those values. So, you know, if you value freedom, if you value equality, how does your work and how does the way you show up in the world reflect those values? And I think if you get clear about your personality, get clear about your strengths, get clear about your, you know, your values and your identity, then, you know, you have a fairly solid sense of who you are. And that, I think, gives you confidence in life.
That sounds very valuable. Sounds like the right way forward. So putting this down into Jack and Jill language, the first thing we have to do is do the personality test.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah,
and you can't fail that, so just do it anyway.
Yeah, just do it anyway. You definitely can't fail that.
And then the next thing you have to do is something else. There was another test you mentioned. Yep.
It's the VIA. It's the one we've spoken about before, and it's the VIA, V-I-A. Character strength survey.
That's a long one, isn't it? That's a long test, I remember.
That is. I think it's got 240 questions.
Yeah, I remember that one. I remember that one. I did it a while back and I haven't got the... I need to do it again. I can't remember the results, though.
Right. So clearly impacted in your mind there, Paul. So it's about half an hour. But for me, it's very worth doing. And then have a think about your values too. I don't have a...
How do you measure that? So having got those results, I mean, like, you know, look at those results. I mean, I looked at that personality test that I had, and I can't say it meant much to me when I read it. I kind of got a bit confused. So how is it best to interpret these things? I mean,
I don't know, because for other people that I've done the test with, and for myself, I really did relate to my results a lot. So I guess it really depends on you. These things, that they're not prescriptive in the sense they don't tell us what to do. Once again, I personally would use this as a springboard. Hmm. First of all, with yourself, have a really good think about what it means to you, which bits you relate to, which bits you don't relate to. If you feel comfortable enough, share it with a partner, with a friend, with family members, because all too often they can give us insights about ourselves that we're just too blind to see.
So it's quite important to have a buddy with this work, I think. I think trying to do this work on your own is actually really difficult.
Yes, I think that's a really good point. If you're able to have a friend or a coach or a family member, then I think it could be very, very useful. Because, we're often blind, both to our strengths and to our weaknesses, you know. People find it very difficult to recognize what's good about themselves. So I think, you know, to get another human being to acknowledge that, that is very powerful, very invigorating.
I agree.
Very energizing and very motivating.
So where to from here? What's next?
So I think, you know, in terms of what we've spoken about today and what we've spoken about in the past, what we've done so far, we've tried to establish really where we're at to start with. So right now we're trying to gauge who you are in terms of personality, character strengths, values, whether you think you have a job, a career, or a vocation, and where you would like to take all of this. So we've mentioned this before, but the best possible self-exercise, I think it's a fabulous way to bring all of this together. So taking 3 or 4 consecutive nights, for those who haven't already done it, with all the information that we've gathered so far about ourselves, I would put that into your journal. I would put that into writing. So taking 3 or 4 consecutive days, 20 minutes each day, imagining how you're going to be, writing about it in the present tense, how you are in the next year, 2 years, 3 years, however far ahead you want to go. But doing this as vividly as possible, evoking as many emotions as possible, because what we know is that emotion is far more motivating than any single goal. So writing about yourself in the future as if you're already there.
Do you find that easy yourself? Sorry to interrupt you, but I find it quite easy to talk about the practical things when I write this stuff. Yeah. But thinking about the emotions of it, I actually find quite difficult. All right, let's an example of happiness or contentment. Like, no, this weekend has been a lovely weekend. Yeah, yesterday morning, I went to the gym early yesterday morning, and I was coming back from the gym, and because I've been running so much around this area, I know where all the fruit trees are, particularly the cherry trees, which are now ripe. Mm-hmm. And I came past one of the cherry trees that I'd been looking at, and I thought, I might pick some of those. And I just had half an hour of picking cherries, and I was like so happy, just like, this is lovely. The sun was shining. I took some fantastic photographs down the river while I was doing it, and it was just such a lovely time. Now, it was beautiful, but there were no strong emotions attached to this. If I was trying to write this up, I wouldn't even know how to describe it. I was happy.
which is fine, Paul. It doesn't have to be strong emotions that you're writing about. It just has to be how you authentically feel and want to feel, you know. You don't have to. I think it's really interesting that you use, you know, this have to or should. You know, let's scrap those two phrases. This is about how you want to authentically be in the world. And that can be with intense emotions, that can be with less intense emotions. It doesn't matter, it just has to be you, you know. I think we just have to get very comfortable with who we are and how we ourselves want to show up in the world. And that, I think, is the beauty of these tests that I've been telling you about. For the fact that they give us perhaps some kind of indication of what our natural preferences might be. It's not, you know, it doesn't tell us everything, but I think it serves as a beautiful springboard to really think about how we want to be in this world and who we want to be, you know. And I think, you know, all frustration, anxiety, fear, all of these things come from not being comfortable enough with who we are and how we're being in this world. Because when you know you're being yourself, when you're knowing that you know that you're showing up in the most authentic possible way, whatever happens, however good or bad, you have that feeling, well, at least I was being true to myself. And you can never, ever feel regret because of that.
That sounds a good place to finish this broadcast, unless you've got more content to add to it. Because if you've got no, that's the point. As long as you can finish your life with no regrets.
Yes. Yeah. I think that's key.
As long as you can look back and go, well, I have no regrets. I mean, I have a few. I don't have that many. But but as long as you can say, look, I did every opportunity and I took every opportunity and I had nothing to worry about per se. I didn't miss out on anything.
Yeah, exactly, Paul.
I think I did. Maybe there was that time. But anyway, we'll go to that time another time. But yes, absolutely. It's a good point, isn't it? So do you have anything more to add? Is there anything to finalize? Are we done?
We're done. We want to get to the point of having a life, living a life with no regrets. And I think that is the perfect place to finish.
Yes, it is. Well, thank you so much for your time. And for persevering with our technical difficulties.
Thank you, Paul. A pleasure as ever. Thank you, Paul.
So it's been great. I look forward to our next conversation and I shall speak to you soon.
Speak to you then. Thank you. Bye.
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 So that seemed okay to me.